This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
There was ever a case study in manipulation, delusion, and the dangers of unchecked charisma, Charles Manson is it. He was a failed musician, a career criminal, and yet somehow managed to convince a group of young people to kill for him, all while barely lifting a finger. How does someone like Manson hold that kind of power? And more importantly, what makes people follow him to such horrific extremes? Today, we're diving into the psychology of Charles Manson with psychotherapist Siobhan Scott. Siobhan, in your professional opinion, was Manson a master manipulator who knew exactly what he was doing? Or was he simply a product of his own delusions, a man who truly believed his own madness and found some weak-minded people to go along with it?
Well, if you needed a criminal guru, white supremacist, pop musician all in one, there was Charlie. And, you know, fortunately, we don't see a lot like him, which is wonderful, which is why he's still infamous at this point, all these decades later. There were a lot of evaluations done on him early on, and I reviewed summaries of those. Mm-hmm. He was early on determined not to be psychotic. He was diagnosed with extreme personality disorders. Guess which ones? Psychopathy and narcissism. Mm-hmm. And even though he had these sort of delusional thoughts about helter-skelter, race wars, you know, these kind of paranoid themes, he could put them on when they were useful to him, and he could drop them when it wasn't useful. So he was seen primarily by the people who evaluated him as highly manipulative, cunning, Machiavellian, and he knew how to target vulnerable people. And so he really was very good at manipulating. Now, he didn't manipulate everybody because a lot of people saw him and ran the other way, but he was able to draw in this young group, particularly young women, who were very vulnerable, who were cast-off people, who were lost. Many of them were homeless runaways. And he knew how to give them what they were needing, which was a sense of family. And then there was the copious use of LSD, which altered people's perceptions, which also made them more vulnerable. And he was just really a walking nightmare, very good at what he did.
And that's the big question is, why was he so good at what he did? What traits did he possess with these people that made him so effective? Because on the surface, you look at this guy, and if you have a healthy brain, you go, it's nuts. But to some people, they went, he's our leader. He's the best thing on earth. How can two people have such dramatically different views on one person? And how does that person speak to the one group and not the other with what they're presenting and be so, so effective with one and not with another?
There were so many gurus at the time. Now, I don't think you were alive.
No.
In 1967.
I was not.
I was a very young child, I'll say, but I was alive then. The whole country was reeling with the Vietnam War, violent protests, shootings on college campuses by the National Guard. It was a crazy time. I remember being a little kid and watching the TV news at night. You had the Zodiac Killer. You had a lot of serial killers were active at that time, certainly much more so than now. And there were lots of people who were lost, and particularly in San Francisco, where Charlie was based in that part of California, it was like a magnet for very confused, drug-addled young people. And these were the people that he preyed upon. And there were lots of weird gurus around at the time who had followings. He just happened to be the more insidious, violent one.
Very interesting. And yeah, the society and where things are at, all that context is so important to try and understand where things are at. That's such a key thing for something like this. Let's talk about how he was able to get these young people that were searching for home, that were searching for, you know, some sort of identity for who they are. And they found it in this group of his followers. And there was a lot of them. There was a lot of people that were under the spell of Charles Manson. I guess, how do you, I mean, there's obviously large cults out there. We see them. But to have all these people basically under one roof and nobody going, this seems a little odd. Charlie's kind of suggesting we go kill somebody over here. Mm-hmm. To go to that, to go from, oh, this is warmth, this is family, now I want you to go kill. You know, it looks really spooky when you put Charles Manson in that frame, but it really is gang culture as well, where it's like, mm-hmm. prove your allegiance to the gang and go do something horrible to somebody that doesn't deserve it. It happens. I mean, one could argue that gang culture is similar as well. It may be cult-like in certain aspects, not very completely, much. but it's really, it's spookier when it's the creepy looking guy bringing all the attractive women in versus, you know, the ghetto and its gang members.
Yeah, 100%. And that shows the danger of humans in large groups and the damage that can be done. I mean, it's simply a fact that you get a group of people isolated from the external factors, you know, from their families, from other people, and they reinforce each other with some very dangerous beliefs and behavior. It even brings to mind military culture for me. You know, my husband was in the military for 13 years. I don't want to knock the military here, but you can get soldiers to commit absolute atrocities against innocent people. We see this throughout history, you know, going back to the 60s in Vietnam, there was the My Lai massacre, where entire villages of people, old people, children, babies, people were just massacred, and they were no threat to anyone. They weren't part of the enemy, you know? And so we see that people in large groups who get fired up, who get this us versus them mentality, people who are not normally violent people, can just sort of go crazy and do awful atrocities because somebody is telling them to.
What's the tipping point, though? I mean, is it different for everybody where you're going to be, okay, I'm hearing this guy out, I believe in it, but now he's saying I'm going to kill, like, that's a bit much, but is it the repetition? I mean, how does it get so normalized that you can get people to go and do those sort of things? And is there any coming back from it once you, you get to that point?
It's really hard to know. Are any of us vulnerable to this sort of thing? I don't think so. I think people with a very strong inner moral compass, a strong character, I can't see you being influenced in that way. You know, you certainly have a healthy ego, but there are people who are, you know, we talk a lot about critical thinkers. There are people who aren't very good at it, and they do tend to be followers. So do those people tend to group together under these kind of malevolent leaders? I think that's probably it. You've just got a different kind of person that will go along with that. And other people filter themselves out of that kind of a group much sooner, or they never join in the first place.
How about getting out of it, like once you're in there? Obviously, we have seen some of Manson followers just last year, I forget which one, but up for parole. I don't remember what happened there, honestly, off the top of my head, if she was granted it or not. But claiming, you know, okay, I've changed, I've reformed, I saw the error in what the hell happened back then. But does anyone truly ever come back from that once you got there? And are they still a type of person that's going to be susceptible to that? Or are you stronger after you've survived that, if you've come out the other side going, well, that was messed up, to not ever have to, not to have to worry about falling into that again?
Yeah, I think it's probably hard to know in advance. It's a case-by-case basis. But I remember, I believe it was Leslie Van Houten who was up for parole. And one of the things that they look for on whether they let someone out, I don't think they did let her out, but one of the things that they look for is, does this person have insight? Do they have understanding that they can articulate in their own words about why they got into that situation, what went wrong, and what have they learned since then? And I remember being somewhat impressed with her testimony, that the woman did really seem to fully own what she had done, but also have a great deal of understanding about what went wrong and what she had learned since. So I think that when people are out of that kind of group, and their thinking returns to normal and they grow, I do like to believe, even though I can come off very cynical based upon my work history, I do like to believe that there's hope for many people, right? Maybe not everybody, but many people. And so that's one of the other determinants. Was this person psychotic? Well, when they get out of the group, do they let go of those strange beliefs? And so I think most of these followers, some may have been psychotic themselves, but I think many were not. And it was just a function of this cult mentality that they were immersed in that made them perceive the world in such a distorted way that they would do horrible things.
And Van Houten actually was released last year, July 11th, is when she was, I completely forgot about all that.
There hasn't been any news about her, so maybe she's keeping a very low profile.
Well, I think she started a new cult, and it's called Amway. Not. She's selling Amway and she's a Mormon. It's a double trouble type thing going on. Yeah, but no. Let's talk about Manson and kind of what made him who he is. What's the recipe? Obviously, there was some abuse in his childhood, and you know that certainly is part of the recipe. But what do you think made him who he was and enabled him to have the power that he ended up having over people?
Yeah. Very, very bad combination of genetics and environment. And, you know, he probably came into the world with certain kinds of vulnerabilities for psychopathy, which we know is a biological condition. The person's brain is actually different. They don't have an functional empathy center where they have compassion for other people. And then you put that kind of instability where he was left with relatives very early on when his mother went to prison, and then a series of institutions and reform schools where he was raped and assaulted in various ways. You end up with a very warped human being. So, as I say, we don't see a lot like him, fortunately. And this was just a really, really bad combination of life experience combined with genetics.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, was he born this way? I mean, there's certainly probably elements that he was, but, you know, and that that all just played into this perfect storm of what Charles Manson ended up being.
Yeah, maybe with the genetics and a very positive family upbringing, he could have been a CEO with all that manipulative skill.
Yeah,
but not a crazy guru LSD, you know, rattled mass murderer.
What I mean, the fact that, you know, he was in prison for many, many years and basically still was Charles Manson. He never really changed all that much, just kind of got deeper and deeper into his beliefs. Was that, when you look back on that retrospectively, obviously he's dead now. Was that surprising to you at all as a psychotherapist, or was that, you know, pretty much to be expected of someone who gets put into that sort of a setting? Because we see some where it's like they get reformed and, okay, yeah, I was wrong, this was horrible, and all that. No, Charlie just kind of kept going as best he could.
Yeah, I think Charlie's personality was really set in concrete. And that's why when they did those evaluations of him, they really stressed the severity of his personality pathology, and that it really, that kind of stuff is set very early in life, and it's how the brain develops. So that's a person I would not expect any kind of therapy techniques or procedures, processes to have any real impact on.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.